Hey, To The Point listeners, enjoy this episode with my man, Paul Reed. Such a good dude, runs a great business out of Colorado, Northwest Roofing Company. And yes, I said roofing, doesn't mean you need to stop listening now. It's actually much bigger than that, because what he's done is utilized his past, his experience, his company to do something much greater, much better. And he created Roofers in Recovery with a buddy of his, and they have helped lots of people. So I love his story. I hope you enjoyed. This was live from RoofCon at the end of last year. Enjoy.
This is To The Point, a Rhino experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, the host of To The Point Home Services Podcast, Cristiano, along with my co-host, my guest co-host, live at RoofCon 2021, the Jeff. How you doing, buddy?
What is going on, Chris? I gotta say, I'm super excited about our guest today.
I know, we've been talking about this guy, and even we've been talking about you behind your back, Paul. How you feel about that?
That's all right, man. It's not the first time.
We've been talking about you behind your back.
In a good way, Paul.
Yeah, in a good way. Hey, listeners, we've got an amazing human being on the show today. I can't wait to hear his story, too. His name is Paul Reed. He is the owner and partner in Northwest Roofing, but even more importantly, the founder of Roofers in Recovery. Paul, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you for having me on, man. I'm honored to be on today.
I'm excited. I told you that pre-podcast. You can tell. Like, I'm excited. I'm a passionate guy, man. So when I get on one, we're going to go down whatever path.
Paul, how you feeling? You nervous? You feeling good? What's
I'm
up?
Ready to go, man. I'm excited. There's just something about this.
Can we have some fun?
Can
we have some fun?
Let's go.
We're going to have some fun.
Chris will be here, but can you and I have some fun?
I got you.
When you work with the Jeff, you got to have thick skin.
Yeah.
I love it. Say, hey, you know, our guest today and I have a lot in common. You know why we have a lot in common? Because we have a monster heart for giving back. And I know that Jeff feels the same way, too. But, you know, but you also have this successful business, and I want to make sure our listeners hear kind of what your story is. And how we usually like to lead this thing in is we just have you say, you know, how did you get into the trades, and then where is the business at today? So we'll start with that, and then I'll get into the roofers with Roofers and Recovery stuff.
Well, I'll tell you why, they both kind of tie together.
Well, then let's talk about
it together. So
tell me the story, Paul.
I have been in the roofing industry now. This is my 29th year.
Wow.
So when I was 18 years old, I grew up on a farm and ranch, Southern Colorado.
I grew up on a farm.
There we go. And my intention was to work on a farm, ranch, drive a truck, because that's what my family did. I had a cousin, one oddball cousin, that was a roofer.
We all have one.
Right. He was a roofer. My cousin goes and gets arrested. He took a check from a cop, of all people, and he spent the check on a crack run.
Oh.
Gets arrested. My dad goes and bails him out of jail and tells me on Monday, he's like, you need to go help your cousin on Monday put that roof on. I'll pay you. You don't have any money. I'll pay you to do that. I go out with my cousin. We put a roof on, and I was home. I was home. I was like, this is what I want to do the rest of my life.
I don't know that that's a common story.
No.
That you went to go put a roof on, and you felt at home.
I felt at home.
Revelation right away, right?
Hey, yes.
Hey, in all transparency, I've put on, I think, 9 roofs because I do a home build. Every year I go do a home build, and I've done the roofing, and it's a small, like 20 by 30 thing, and I didn't want to do all that, so I did not feel at home on the roof.
I have something wrong with me. I was dropped as a baby. Chris, I don't know. I was at home though on that roof.
Chris didn't want to carry his backpack in here. Can you imagine trying to do a roof?
True.
Oh,
that's
true. Yeah. A bundle of shingles would kill them.
100%. You see how big I am, right? Like, I'd be in trouble. Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, man. I'm sorry.
No, so I was at home, man. I was on that roof, and I was like, this is where I want to be the rest of my life. But what came with that was part of the reason I was at home was because we got to drink beer and smoke weed all day long on top of that roof.
Got it, okay.
And so for the next 15 years...
Starting to be clear now.
Yeah, right.
Get so them together.
For the next 15 years of my life, I was that guy on the roof drinking beer, smoking weed. Progressively got worse. You know, the weed turned into cocaine.
Harder.
Yep, a little harder. Ran that for a long time. Then eventually got into meth.
That's a gnarly one.
That's a gnarly one. That's the devil's drug. That I always tell them, kids, stay away from that one. That's the devil's drug.
That's the one.
That's the one that will get you. So 14 years ago, I don't know what happened. Ended up in an emergency room. And next thing I know, I was in a mental hospital. And that was the time I was like, something needs to change. So, been sober 14 years after that. But that's how I got into roofing, is because I have a crackhead cousin.
Congratulations. Congrats, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Holy shit.
talking about coming out of the gate with a bang.
I mean, seriously.
I love that. Man, thank you for being like so vulnerable to share that. I'm sure you've shared that story. It's actually part of what makes it powerful is you being willing to share it. Because everybody slips up.
I mean, I'm not alone, brother. There's been other guys like that, right?
100%.
That stigma of like, I'm embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed, man. I was in a mental hospital 14 years ago.
You can't let it have that kind of power on you anyway. No. Like, no. Or the worst thing you could do is not use it to make an impact. The worst thing you could do is take that experience that actually turned you into a better human being and not use it and share it with somebody to impact them.
I love how you've taken ownership over it. I can tell. And it doesn't own you. So kudos for that.
Yeah, thank you. And I just feel like if one person can relate to that and go, you know what? That guy made it. So that guy made it because look where he was 14 years ago. Look at him now. I want to do that. That's all it's about, that one guy.
And I'm sure it's way more than one guy. So, again, I love the way that you own it. I mean, there is a stigmatism in mental health and alcoholism and, you know, addiction in general. Yeah. We have a bad stigmatism, but people that take ownership over it can break the generational cycle. So, again, kudos.
Okay, so let's keep going. So the business progresses. Like, where are you? So where are you at? Like, I need take me on. Keep me going down this path. Keep me going down this path. I need you to start to fill the gaps.
14 years ago, I go to a rehab in Denver, Colorado. I grew up in Southern Colorado. So I was about 5 hours away from the big city, right? I grew up small town, 700 people, tiny town. And
so you were like Southern Colorado.
Southern Colorado, on the New Mexico border.
Yeah, you're close to me too.
Yeah. So from there, I went to work in Denver. I met a guy at rehab that I was kind of that guy at rehab. It's 30-day rehab that I just thought I just needed to go and rest and sleep and, you know, I'd be fine. I'd go home and I could drink still and, you know, maybe not use meth, but I could use lighter drugs like heroin or, you know, cocaine.
Because it's better.
It's better for you.
Yeah, it's better for you.
So I was that guy. But day 27, I was going to say, God grabbed me on day 27 and said, there's a better way. And at that day, I became willing to do whatever it took.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
I'm going to interrupt you. Because I want to make sure I really get the most out of that statement you just made. You said, God grabbed me. In what way? Like, was it something you just felt it? It was audibly, you saw something and you knew? Like, can you help me understand that moment?
Yeah.
I want to experience it with you, man.
Big.
I want to experience it with you.
All right. So there was a girl that came into rehab the exact same day that I did. She was a meth addict as well. She was from Wyoming. And when we were in rehab, we became kind of friends. We kind of bonded a little bit because, you know, she was a meth addict and, you know, we just kind of bonded over that. And there was nothing, you know, like romantic wise. We just were friends. But on day 27, we were in a class and I looked over and she was glowing. She was literally glowing. And she had like, and what that was, it was life that was back in her. Like that day.
The aura
of life. There was just life. You could tell because we were zombies, dude. We were zombies. And she had life to her. And there was something, I'm getting chills right now thinking about it.
Give me goosebumps.
Joy of the Lord.
Yes. And I immediately broke down. I started bawling. I'm talking like ugly cry.
Dude, you were so close to your 30 days too. But you said 27?
On day 27, I was almost out.
You were right there.
I was right there. And I started bawling. And I was dramatic. I ran out of the classroom, right? And the counselor follows me out like, what's wrong? You know, what's going on? And all I could say was, I want what she has. I didn't know what it was. At this time, like, you know, looking back, I knew it was like life came back into her, like God touched her. And I was like, I want that. That's what I want. And all he could tell me was like, are you willing to do whatever it takes? I said, yes, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. So from there, he goes, I need you to go live in a sober living house. Because I was just going to go home. So what that meant was I lived in a sober living house, 4-bedroom sober living house with 24 other dudes.
Wow.
Okay? And
wow.
Go work for this company because he knew somebody that was in recovery that owned a roofing company. He says, go work for this company and they'll hire you. So I went and I got a job with them. They paid me $250 a week to run production. I was a production manager.
Sheesh.
All I could do at that point in my life was just kind of keep my head down and work. We were doing 15 roofs every day and I was making $250
a week.
Wow. And the sober living house cost me $375 a month. I smoked two packs of cigarettes a day. and I drank a 12-pack of Mountain Dew a day.
Mountain Dew, there you go.
And so I didn't have
it's
any
not,
money.
It's not balancing out.
No.
It doesn't
and
seem
so,
right.
But I'll tell you what. God made sure I had Mountain Dew and cigarettes, and I had enough money to pay that sober living house.
Dude, that's better than the alternative.
There.
That was the switch. You know what I wonder is, like, how many signs did you miss in the first 27 or the first 26 days?
Oh, 270, right? Like every day, I miss something.
Yeah, because if you're not looking for it, it's kind of hard to see. Sometimes it's even hard to understand because I think a lot of times, you know, this is something I've, you know, in my walk, as I've kind of shared with you a little bit, is that I never have ever heard anything audibly ever. But I get signs that are like affirmation for me,
yep.
And it happens to me frequently enough that I know, like, yes, I'm doing the right thing. Yes, I'm doing the right thing, and that's how I witnessed it. But I know there's tons of stuff that I've missed along the way that I probably wish I would have caught sooner.
Yes.
So I just make me wonder. I'm like sitting here thinking through your process that first 26 days. I'm like, man, how much shit did you miss?
Oh.
But you caught it on the right day.
I caught it on the right
day.
Caught
it on the right day.
I had made my plans, you know, to go back home.
Yeah, dude, you're going to go back home and do some drinking again. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm just going to do some drinking. And that, by the way, was going to go right back down the same path.
Wow, instantly, yeah.
The definition of insanity.
Yes.
Over and over.
Do the same thing over and over again, expecting something different. Okay, so now you're back into roofing. You're smoking cigarettes and you're drinking Mountain Dew.
Yes, and I'm working at a company. $250 a week. And at this point, I'm just going, God, I trust you, right? Because you
did it
made
feel
this happen.
Good? Even though, I mean, did it feel good? Or were you like, ah, damn, like this is tight? Or like, how were you feeling about all this?
I was just in trying to trust God at this point because I'm telling you, before I went into rehab, I was using about $500 a day in dope.
Wow.
And I'm going, I'm using $500 a day in dope, you know, a month ago. Now I make $250 a week. I don't know what you got planned, God, but like,
seems a little weird.
Speed it up, God.
Right, like, I'm, you know, I'm running out of cigarettes and Mountain Dew here. Like, something needs to happen. And I just kept my head down. And I went to work, and I prayed every single day. And just, I trusted in the process. And from that point on, I eventually made partner in that company. And we were doing about $30 million a year.
Wait,
in
wait,
two
wait,
years,
wait, wait,
I
wait,
made
wait.
Partner.
Wait,
that was a jump.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
I got to pull you back in, okay? And this happens often, so... because I need to, I like timelines and I like to understand like some of that path because that's a monster jump from $250.
Yeah.
To that. So what, help me with the timeline. So the year that you are starting back in and you're making the 250 is what?
2007.
Okay. So right before 08. Right before 08. You remember 08. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, so then take me through that timeline. So you go into 08, like there's people didn't make it through it.
No, I remember, you know, yes, that first, I'm going to call it a year because I think I got a raise like $350 that
Ooh,
first year.
Look at you.
I was balling. I could buy a case of Mountain Dew at that
could
point.
You go, could you go get a Chrysler LeBaron Mercedes hybrid car? Did you hear that story?
That was awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was close to getting that. And I made... Yeah, I trusted the process. I said, I can't run my life. If it's left up to me, left to my own devices, it doesn't work. So here you go. Whoever it was that was in front of me, like I just listened to everyone. And I probably got a lot of bad advice along the way, but I got a lot of great advice.
Sure.
I just listened to everybody. Like my ideas weren't ideas that anybody should listen to, especially me.
Okay.
Yeah, especially me. I was... Bad advice.
Didn't get you in a good place to begin with.
So we started, you know, we had great success, and I actually made, I don't know, the guy came in one day, and he's like, I've never seen anybody work like you. I've never seen anybody be as devoted as you, and I want to give you 20% of my company. And I'm talking, we're doing $30 million a year.
That's God.
That's God. Right.
Okay, that's hard to relate to that type of a story. It's exceptional.
There's no explanation.
You need equity. Boom.
Right.
What did that do to your mindset? Were you like, holy crap, or were you like, thank you, I'm going to go.
I'm going to go. Let's go. Right? And so that actually went, story gets a little crazier, went another couple years. Okay? And me and that guy at the time, we had a parting. He had some issues going on. I probably had issues too, right? I had my share of the blame as well. And we split the sheets. All right. And so here it is in 2012.
Okay.
At this point, all right. 2012. And now here I am. I went from making $250 a week to being part owner of a $30 million a year roofing company to the next day, nothing. And I was like, all right, God, you've put me through it. And I'm with you. You're with me, most importantly. And where do we go from here? So I go, I'll just start my own company. And we're going to go back home to the southern Colorado because I know where there are a bunch of old T-lock shingles. And we could just go sell. No one's ever did insurance work in my town. We could go in there and crush it. So within 30 days, I had sold over $1 million worth of roofs.
Wow.
And my wife, it was me and my wife, we sold $1 million worth of roofs. And I'm going, God, thank you, God. Like, this is amazing. You know, you've really watched out for us. We're building a job, and I get a phone call, and it was from a guy out of Denver that we weren't real close at all. Like, we weren't friends. We weren't buddies. And I remember looking at the phone, and I go, why is this guy calling me? You know, you ever got one of those phone calls? You're like, I don't really want to talk to this guy. And so
that's kind of like when Jeff calls me.
Right.
Understood. Voicemail. Straight to voicemail.
The phone rings. Excuse me. The phone rings like five times. Finally, I was like, whatever. I'll see what he wants. Yeah. I answer it. And I was like, in my toughest voice I could use, hello, what do you want? You know? And he goes, hey, it's Tom. Okay.
Tom.
Yeah, what are you doing, Tom?
You're trying to be a badass.
Right, I'm trying to be a badass and show him, like, you know, what are you calling me for? Look at me, man. I just sold $1 million of roofs in 30 days.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know why I'm calling you. I'm literally sitting here on the side of the street eating an ice cream cone, but I had a feeling I needed to call you, and I want to partner up with you. And I go, okay. And he goes, no, really, I want to partner up with you. I don't know what you got going on in life right now, but I just have this overwhelming feeling that we need to partner. And so that's Northwest Roofing. So that's Tom Brown. That's my current partner.
Got it.
Right? And very successful company at the time. He didn't need me to be his partner. He didn't need cash equity, like nothing. He just goes, I want you to come in, and here is 33% of my company.
Damn.
Are we sensing a pattern here?
Third?
Sensing a pattern. So I'm going, you know, I'm doing okay. I'm doing good. We just, you know, I'm calculating the money. We sold $1 million of roofs, worth of roofs. So that means I'm going to make, you know, X. So I already knew, you know, kind of was in the pipeline, all this. But it just weighed on me. I told him to kind of get him off my back because he kind of went, I sensed he was doing a God thing, like that was God telling him, like I knew. So to get him off my back, I said, tell you what, I'll pray about it. And that got him off the phone, right? And he's like, okay. So the next morning, I was like, maybe I should pray about that one.
Like really pray about it.
Maybe I should really pray about it. So I did. And it was overwhelming, like this is what you should do. So now I have to go turn and tell my wife, like, hey, you know that company we started a month ago?
Yeah, about that.
We're merging it with Northwest Roofing.
Yeah, that's exceptional. I love that you came in hard to that call and ended with, let me pray about it.
Yes.
I went from, that's like, the ultimate takeaway. Hold on, let me take that off the table right now.
Yeah, went from like threatening his life to saying, let me pray about doing business with you.
To happen once, but twice?
Yeah.
That's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence.
And 20 to 33%.
Oh, my God.
To 33%. Now, we're actually 51-49, but he's 51, so he's still my boss. Still have a boss.
Understood.
We all have bosses.
Yes.
So what is your role in the, like, what is your role in the business today? Like, what is it that you're, in, like, in charge of?
So my passion is really, like, service, right? So what I love doing is I'm still involved, like, literally in all our sales. So we transitioned from a residential roofing company. We used to be one of the larger residential guys in Denver to... Now we're one of the larger commercial companies.
I have some big customers in Denver.
Yeah.
HVAC and plumbing players, but it's a great market.
It is. So my role was, he's going to run the day-to-day, you know, the office stuff, because I'm not an office guy. I'm an old roofer that, you know, was smoking weed and drinking beer on top of the roof. So, like, I'm more comfortable there than I am.
But
in
we've,
the
stopped
office
that.
We've stopped that 14 years ago. So, my role is really kind of client relations.
Okay.
And relationships. I'm huge on relationships.
It's a relationship business.
It's a relationship business, and most people miss that aspect. They're all about sales.
Yep.
I say this all the time to people. I have not sold a roof in probably 8 or 9 years. But I've built relationships that I've never done less than $4 million a year personally in commercial roof sales or residential sales.
Can I take a guess on how that happened?
Go ahead, yeah.
So I'll bet you that it probably happened because you genuinely care about trying to take care of that person, so you're not selling anything, you're just educating them on what they need because you genuinely believe that that's what needs to happen. Then you that you are the one to take care of them. This is what you've been given to give to serve with, and you're going to take care of them because you genuinely care. That builds a relationship because it's emotion. You're able to connect emotionally because you're not faking it with some sales presentation.
No, that's exactly
you created a meaningful relationship first. You influenced the right way with the right genuinely care. I think is the best marketing tactic ever, is to do that. But that's how you're able to create a meaningful relationship. People
Absolutely.
Want to do business with people that they like. They built a relationship with even before, because you do the same thing as everybody else. So why'd they pick you?
Right. Well, no one likes to be sold.
Of course not. You know, I'll tell you what, though. I don't like to be sold. And I'm naturally a salesperson. That's the gift I've been given. I've gotten really good at marketing because I know how to create emotion because I'm a passionate guy and I feel all this. I'm a very empathetic guy. So I feel emotions about people. Like, I think, oh, if I do this, how would that make me feel? And then I make decisions based on that. Right or wrong, it's how I roll. But, shit, where was I going with that? Hang on a second. What did you just say?
About relationships.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
Damn it, I had a good topic I was going to hit on. I messed myself up. Carry on with the story. And when I remember it here, like 3 seconds later, I'll interrupt you and then I'll tell you.
There we go. So that's the focus of our company, is they're building relationships and experiences for our customers. And we truly try to partner with our clients. Because that's the thing. We have to understand our clients. That's part of sales, right? So when I say I haven't sold a roof, I don't know if that's actually a true statement, like, because that's part of the whole process, but I'm more focused on the relationship. Sales are going to happen.
Sales and education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. I wish I could remember what I was going to say. I know it was really good.
Were you tying into branding strategy?
No, it wasn't that, but it'll come up and I'll think about it. I was almost there. Like when you said something, I was like, oh, and I was like, no, but I don't got it.
So question, what sets you guys apart? I mean, like Chris said earlier, everyone does roofs, commercial roofs, residential. What sets you guys apart in the marketplace?
I think it's different with every client.
Yeah.
I'm super intentional. The listeners will probably get sick of the word because I'm going to say intentional and partnership and relationships like way too much, but it's true. I'm super intentional with every client because I feel every client is different. I don't feel that there's one whole marketing thing that I could just use that's going to work for everybody. So I'm super intentional with everybody. So what sets us apart is I learn my customer. So thank God, because of I'm horrible on the computer. Like, I can't get on and, like, make an Excel spreadsheet or anything like that. But what I'm really good at is I will stalk a guy down, and I will see that you're a fan of the Baltimore Ravens. You like to fish. You love golfing. You have three kids that go to Stanley Lake High School. And so I customize my marketing to every client. We're intentional with the customer that we are targeting, and I learn everything I possibly can about that client.
And get emotionally connected to them.
Yeah. Man after my own heart. Wouldn't they be a Broncos fan?
Yeah, be a Broncos fan.
I think I just said the Ravens because the Broncos are playing the Ravens on Sunday. Going to the game tomorrow, so.
After Elway's gone, I mean, who are the Broncos anymore?
You mean Manning?
Manning.
Yeah.
And we got Teddy.
Touchdown Teddy. Yeah. Touchdown Teddy.
That's right. Go Cardinals. Just forgot to throw that out there.
That's right. 3-0.
3-0. So I do want to talk about brand now. You know, what's interesting is that I've recently tried to acquire a branding company because I believe a lot in it, and we're not a branding agency. But I do know this, that brand matters in two ways. And really, it was super exposed during COVID. Like, if you didn't focus on your brand, COVID certainly exposed that, I believe.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So brand equity is a thing that you have to pay attention to. And it's almost like, it seems like it's so far away, because it kind of is. Like, you don't just say, sweet, I do a rebrand or I change my brand, and like, boom, it works, because it doesn't work that way. Brand consistency matters. Like, you got to constantly keep putting it in people's face, but it's got to be backed by something greater than just you being a roofer. It's got to be backed by credibility. It's got to be backed by reviews. It's got to be backed by good intent and, like, and being genuine. Like I said, genuinely care. There's a lot behind the brand. So, like, the image itself is one thing, but what's behind it is what really matters. The story behind it, if you will, is what matters, because that's the connector. But you got to do it, and you can't ignore it. And it also helps not only in sales as you go on, it also helps with recruiting. Because you've got this brand that does good, you're great in the market, it's a bigger company, and you can entice people to want to come and at least talk with you, and then they hear your story, and that's the hook.
Right.
So how has the brand, like, I don't know, because I'm not certain of the industry in regards to roofing in the Denver market, how is the Northwest brand equity in that market, and how much do you think that, I mean, what's the importance to you of brand, and how good is your brand equity in the market?
I think we're probably one of the most underbranded companies there are. And I'll give you a couple examples.
Sorry. Did you see the slide? Were you in there when I put the slide up that showed the top competitors?
I was.
I think I put Denver on there.
You did.
And were you on there?
Oh, no. No. But there's something to this. So there's two parts of the story.
Okay.
So we're in Arizona, right? Where's Arizona? That's in the southwest part of the United States.
That's right.
You know my name and my company is in Arizona?
Okay.
Northwest Roofing.
Ain't gonna work.
Okay, that's my point. I hear what you're saying.
Did you hear me bring that up?
I did. I know what you're saying. I'm not so concerned about my brand being like on billboards and all these things.
Sure.
I am concerned about building what I call a raving fan network that does all my marketing for me, that my brand, that I could be successful being in Northwest Roofing in Arizona in the Southwest.
Sure.
Okay? So I'm intentional in every market I'm in of, like, what do I want to do? Do I want to do $5 million a year down here? And I figure that out with them. And so I go out and I intentionally find my targeted customers. And I'm Northwest Roofing. And I go and I find one customer that I can make a raving fan out of.
I wonder if you do more business in, like, Peoria, Sun City. Because then you can almost
That's
play
a great
it off
question.
Like you're Northwest. Northwest Phoenix.
Yes, that's.
This is my marketing break again. Sorry, I interrupted you again.
No, that's
bad interrupting. I apologize.
I was worried about that, right, with the Northwest. But my goal is to find that one person that's going to be a raving fan of me.
Yep.
And then what I call it from there, they are my third party validation.
Got it.
If I could make them be a raving fan of me, and I'm intentional, like I pick off a big dog in the Phoenix market that does. He has a ton of properties, and everybody knows him. And so I go in and I serve them, and they're a great client, and I'm a great partner for them. Now I use those people as my third-party validation to the next customer.
Call so-and-so.
Yes, call them. Everybody knows that company.
Yep.
Call them. I do work for them. They're a raving fan of me. And so that's the branding that I
Got
do,
it.
And it's probably super unconventional. I'm just very intentional with our goals of what we're going to do in this market. You know, are we leaving money on the table, and could it be bigger if I was Southwest Roofing of Arizona? Probably so. But I just have certain goals. I'm not trying to be the biggest. I want to get what we're capable of serving.
Got it. So that's actually something very common to what we do. Like I told you before, we're so heavy HVAC and plumbing and electrical. It's been 14 years of doing those things, and now we're starting to segue into roofing. Well, every time I've gotten into a new vertical, I've done a similar thing where we'll take on a small group of roofing contractors across the United States, and then we will crush it for them, measure everything, because I measure everything, so they know exactly what we did, and then we lean on them. As we're starting to grow the business and scale the business, because, you know, we're in the United States, Canada, and Australia, and my goal is to be in all English-speaking markets, but I use them as my advocates to progress. So I say, hey, now I got somebody that's up in the Twin Cities that wants to come on board with us. I have so-and-so over in Madison, Wisconsin. Give them a call. Ask them how we've done for them. And that's what I've always used is kind of raving fans. We call them our advocate program.
Right.
And it's making advocates of the business based on what we're actually doing for them, but then making sure they actually know what they're doing for them. So similar thing, I think it's actually a really great thing because the name Rhino in the roofing industry has minimal brand equity. I'm building it right now. Like, this is what we're doing. It's just we're at the infancy phases. In the other side of that world, we have a monster brand equity, which is good for our business because we've now built that thing. But we also used it by having raving fans.
Right. I love the raving fans. That's the key to our whole success is we create raving fans. But not only for our customers, we have to be intentional to create raving fans of our staff.
100%. Thank you for saying
that. And then you got to take it one step further. You have to make a raving fan out of your staff's family.
That's good.
Yes.
I've heard that this week.
I'm telling you, this is a game changer. So what are the biggest issues that most people have with their salesmen? Well, their wife is mad because, you know, they didn't bring home a check that week because they're commission-based or blah, blah, blah. So what happens? They're in a big fight. The guy comes to work on Monday. He's not worth darn because he's been fighting with his wife all week because she hates the company he works for. So if I could focus on that and I could make sure that the wife and the kids and everybody are raving fans of the company and they're supporting him and they're cheering him on, it's a game changer.
That's good.
I like that.
It's huge. How many? Are you married?
I am.
Okay. Is your wife a raving fan of your company?
100%. She's our COO.
And she has to be. She has to be. Right? But if you look, you start breaking that down into your key people, are their spouses a raving fan of the company? If they're not, you've got to figure out how to fix that. Because if you're able to fix that, I promise you that guy's performance at work is going to be 10x.
100%. This is culture on steroids. We've heard culture, 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 but you've taken it a step further.
Yeah, so as you're talking about it, I'm sitting here thinking through, like, who are the spouses that are raving fans of my company?
We interviewed our staff, and we found that, like, at one point, like, half of them were not a raving fan of the company, and that was a huge issue. Okay, why aren't they not? Well, she's mad because, like, you know, that commission check, because, you know, a lot of the guys work on commission.
Yeah.
I didn't get paid for, you know, 4 weeks. Okay, well, how can we fix that?
Yeah.
You know, can we do a draw, you know, whatever. How can we fix this? Once we fix those issues, things started to flourish.
Hey, can I ask you a question? That as I'm, like, writing this thing out, I'm literally making a note for myself to do something like this. How honest do you think the feedback was? Is there any, like, concern of them being like, well, I don't want to say something wrong that jeopardizes your job? Do you feel like when you did the interviews with the families that you were getting honest feedback?
That's a great question, and that was a concern of mine because most people did walk in and they were like, oh, everything's good. My wife loves you, and it's all good, and kids love you.
It's got to be in how you ask the
question. I started it. It is how you ask a question because I started to go, listen, here's why we're doing it. I personally discovered that my wife was not a raving fan of Northwest Roofing.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
And so I explained that. Here's why my wife was not a fan of Northwest Roofing, because I was treating Northwest Roofing like I was a brain surgeon. Like, people's lives were in my hands. I wasn't saving anybody's lives. You know, we were providing a service and a value for, like, for not only our customers, but, like, our employees.
But I was
working at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, 5 o'clock in the morning.
I see what you're saying.
And I'm cranky, and I'm pissed off, and my wife was not a raving fan because I'm giving everything to Northwest Roofing, and I'm only half-ass at home.
But the intention was good.
The intention was to do good for my family.
Right. But no balance.
So I explained to the guys, like, here's my experience. My wife is not a fan of the company because of these reasons. I'm working on fixing that. At that point, let their guard down, and then they could tell you exactly what's going on at their house.
So follow up, I love studying people, and this is very fascinating. So did you find that the level of satisfaction of the spouses went up with tenure, or it went down? Because that talks a lot to your culture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know. That's
a good measure.
Is that like a 2.0 steroids question?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I want to know because
I'm going to go look at that.
The longer people are with your company, they should feel better because you poured into them. You invested into them.
Well, and they've been through that growth, and they've seen what you said, and they've been a part of those
changes.
Well,
their life should be better every year that they're there.
But if they start to feel worse, then you know you have a culture problem.
That's a great...
Is that a 2.0?
Yeah.
Do we need to get offset and talk about that later?
I think so.
All right.
Now I'm worried.
Paul, you're my boy. We're going to talk.
Paul's like, I was feeling good up till about 2 seconds ago.
It just popped in my mind. I'm like, that's a lever. You know, tenure. How is it? How have you poured into your people? And if they've been there longer, it should go up.
Yes.
They should feel like owners of your company.
Yes.
This is interesting. So let me ask a couple other questions. I think we're about 35 minutes into this podcast. And honestly, we completely derailed off our normal questions,
but I'm sorry.
But no.
This is better.
No, but when we do that, it's because it's that good that I'm like, let's just keep going.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful that we're going down this path. We just uncovered something. Like, I just learned something and took a note on the podcast that I had to remind myself to go and do. So thank you for sharing that with me. I really hope it goes well.
Amy, if you're listening, I hope you love Ryan.
I got a lot of interviews to go through. So I'm going to figure out how to plan that out. So let's do this too, because I want to make sure that the people side of the business is obviously extremely important. You got to have really satisfied employees, and I will tell you, I think it's actually the hardest thing to manage as the business has grown for me is just managing the people, because you're juggling a lot of different things and trying to make sure that everybody's. And the best thing we've been able to do is just you put different KPIs in place and you manage those KPIs and you care about them. You give them the opportunity to educate themselves every single month so they're constantly getting better for themselves. If the better they are, the smarter you are for yourself, the better you are for our customers, the better you are for one another. We've tried to build this culture of everybody. Like I talk about when we go and serve somewhere, like one Friday a month, if I looked at that from just straight payroll hours, like what am I spending in all these salaries for them to go and do nothing for my business, I would be like, oh, dear Lord. Like, because it's a lot. That's the short-sighted vision. If I look at it long-term, these guys are going and serving together to give something to somebody else that has nothing to do. Like, it's not going to give them anything other than to feed their souls and their hearts.
Right.
But what that does do is that people don't leave. People don't leave. Then people want to come and work for our business, and that's genuinely what we want. So they care about one another. They're educating themselves. We go and do things together. We pull their families into the Christmas party. We go all out in the Christmas party, and I try to communicate with as many families as we can while we're there, and it's my time to try and make that connection. But what I'm hearing you say is, like, I don't know that that's enough. I don't know that that's enough for me to do in a year's time frame. I think I have to do something different, because we do quarterly team builders. We fly our out-of-state employees in, and we do this thing, but it's just the team. It's not their families or nothing like that.
I think if you're intentional with you have to understand that your biggest customer is actually your employees. They're your number one customer,
right?
Your employees.
And their spouses, apparently.
And their spouses.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how many times someone's having issues at home that it affects their work.
That's true.
And if working for your company is what is the number one cause of their issues at home, you've got a problem at your company.
Dude, I'm telling you, like,
this is deep.
This got good quick.
And I'm not perfect at it, right? We're intentional. We try it. And there's some stuff that slides and, you know, whatever. But the times that we are 100% intentional with that, it makes all the difference in the world. And I'm telling you, like, because their kids are a fan. Their kids are wanting to wear a Northwest Roofing shirt to school, to take a school picture, you know. That's what it's about. And at that point, that's now creating true culture. Because how else do you create culture? Because we have fun things too, and we take them, you know, let's go golfing. Well, the wife and the kids are at home. What did they do?
I think you've discovered something that we haven't talked about at all this week. This is deep. Chris is going to have us out at Rhino next month. Our spouses and everybody. I can see the wheels turning.
Well,
and
I happen to be in Arizona, so.
And Paul, I'm down for it. I'm down for it.
There's food. I'm down.
I'm gonna say, look what you did, Paul. I'd be like, hey, everybody, this is Paul. He's the one who made all this happen right
here. Thank Mr. Reed.
Yeah, so, okay, I want to wrap up by doing this. And thank you again, man, for sharing all that stuff. And thank you actually for giving me some solid takeaways. And one thing that I feel like I'm super blessed with this podcast is that I get to learn so much from our guests. And I always like, I want to try and be the dumbest guy in the room, which isn't always all that hard. But I try to be the dumbest guy in the room, so that way I'm constantly trying to learn from somebody who's smarter than me so I can be better. I think that's a pretty common thing that people focus like that are focused like me. I have ADHD, so like I can only focus on one thing at a time, one task at a time. But when I go in, I go all in on it, and I'm always trying to find out, what don't I know? What don't I know? What don't I know? So when I get to do this, I get to learn so much stuff. So I appreciate you sharing it. And it's not always like business, how to grow my business in one way. It's how do I grow my culture? How do I continue to make that better? Because without that, my business is what? It's not near as meaningful. So what I want the listeners to know is two more questions is, where is Northwest Roofing at today? Like, where are you guys at? Like, the size, because you're obviously not just in Denver, you're also in Arizona. Like, what size of a business are you guys managing today?
So we're managing today about a $30 million a year company.
Nice. Okay.
On there. We're down a little bit, so we've been bigger than that this year. We're a little bit down because no storm activity in Denver. Retail markets got a little bit tougher. Arizona's been pretty good monsoon over the last few months.
Thank you when it rains.
Thanks for that. But yeah, we're about a $30 million a year company.
I can fix that problem real quick. just so you know, real quick. I love to live is in the shoulder, what we would call the shoulder season. I love to be the guy that wins in the hardest season. So that's why I showed that slide that shows even in the worst months what the surge volume looks like. I like to go after that and then take that whole chasing the storm piece of the business out of the equation.
Yeah.
If you can win that game, obviously you do it all. That's how you win that game, and you keep scaling. And that's what I'm hyper-focused on right now. And we're already doing an exceptional job at it. It's just way easier than I had expected it to be. So I'm like super grateful I was pulled into this. So still, it's an amazing size company. You hit different hurdles, even all the way up from 1 million to 3 million to 5 million to 10 million. Like, you hit these different hurdles that you have to figure out all along the way in businesses. I've been grateful enough to be involved in monster home services companies, which is cool to be a part of, but I really love it when the guy's like, you know, sitting at a million is like, man, can I get to two? And if we can work with them, I love being able to help them get to two because it's easier.
Yeah.
He's just missing things. So last question though is, and I love this one, what's next for you, man? Like, what is the, I want to know what's next for Paul Reed, and what do you want your legacy to be? I have an idea what the legacy is going to be, but what's next for the company and what's your legacy going to be? Have you thought about what your legacy is? It's kind of crazy to think about it.
Ah, man.
Somebody asked me that question and it rocked me one day. I was like, I think I know my legacy. Like, I had to sit and really think, like, what do I need that to be?
You rocked me because I speak a lot about legacy and impact investment and all these things. No one's ever asked me what I wanted my legacy to be, and I've never thought about that.
That's
and
my gift to you. That's my
yes,
gift to
thank
you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And my legacy, if I really had to say, I just want to be, you heard Ed Milet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, I spoke
right
before.
I want to be the man I'm supposed to be. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what God has planned for me. I don't know what it is, but I want to be the man I'm supposed to be. Like, bottom line, but what does all that include? You know, I think at one point my legacy was, I just wanted my kids to be proud of me because I messed up, you know, years ago before I got sober.
Uh-huh.
And that was what I wanted my legacy to be. I wanted my kids to be proud of me. You know, and today they're proud of me.
That's great.
Today they're proud of me. So I got that one.
What are your kids' names?
We got six.
What are the names?
We got Logan, Jake, Kia, Mark, Callie, and Darian.
Cool.
And five grandkids.
What are their ages?
27, 26, 26, 24, 21. I think Mark's 22. Yeah.
Good grief. You had a bunch of teenagers at the same time.
Yeah.
But you're living the good life. They're out on their own.
They are.
They're supporting
empty
themselves.
Nesters.
You got grandbabies.
We got grandbabies.
That's
nothing
cool.
Better.
That's cool.
Love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, here's my feeling on that is I can understand why it's hard to think about it, like on a micro level of what is that legacy. But on a macro level is you're in this discipleship thing. You've been given the gift of leadership. You've been given the gift of having the checkered past that you have to learn from, to speak from.
Right.
And you get to impact and change somebody's lives differently. You're doing it with Roofers in Recovery.
Yeah.
You're doing it through your employees. You're doing it through focusing on your culture. So your legacy is one where you're actually growing human beings' hearts and souls to be good people and to give back and to just be, you know, try to be more intentional with what they're doing as human beings. Like, the thing I look at is I've been given these gifts, you know, and sales knowledge. I love learning different sales stuff. I love learning different marketing stuff. I'm very progressive, so I love chasing technology, see what else can I do next for our contractors, because I'm always trying to think about what can I do to help them grow. It's just so much deeper than that. Like, that's just the, we exist to grow your business is the motto of my company. It sounds like it's pretty straightforward. We exist to grow your business, period. But when you unpack that, there's so much in it. And what it comes down to is, what am I doing to build you as a human being? What am I doing to take my story to build you as a human being? That's what it is. That's what you're doing. That's what you're doing, man. None of this is on accident, right?
No.
Like, none of this is on accident.
My mind is spinning. I'm sitting here going, I've got to go write that down and figure it out. But we've been put, like, guys like myself, and I could tell, like, talk to you, that God put people like us on this platform for a reason. We went through a lot of things in our previous life.
Sure.
Right? Because we needed those experiences.
100%.
And how are we going to use this gift today to impact other people? We spoke briefly about the impact investing. And that's what it's about. When I start talking about, like, a raving fan culture, but, hey, I need the wife and the kids to be raving fan. Now, you know, most people are investing. They're like, I'm going to invest into crypto and Bitcoin and all these things. I give a damn about those things. I want to make an investment that actually has an impact. Money's money. That doesn't matter. That's going to come.
Yep.
That's just going to come if you do the right thing. Do the right thing. It's going to come. But what truly can I do to make a difference? Like, I think that's why my legacy needs to be.
I love it.
Is I want to be the guy that is all in on impact investment, that everything I do, that I'm intentional with everything that I do, is making an effect and a difference for the people around me.
Done.
Thank you.
You got it, man.
Investment.
There we go.
That's what I'm talking about. That feels good. I got goosebumps. Dude, this is unlike any other podcast you've ever done.
This was the best one I've been involved with.
This is fantastic. Man, thanks so much for sharing the story. Like, this was, like, you could tell when I'm not interested in the podcast, it starts to come off pretty easy because I don't ask any questions. When I railroad a podcast and it'll ask anybody else ask questions is when you know, like, I'm all in and you're just kind of tugging on the right strings for me. We've not done a podcast like this before, and I'm so excited to actually share it and see what the impact is that comes from it, because every time I start to feel a bit uncomfortable about posting something that's, like, too much about talking about your spirituality or God or whatever, I'm always like, and then I'm like, man, that's not what I was built for.
No.
You just put it out there.
You're
just
built to be bold, brother.
Boldly proclaim.
Listen, man, I appreciate your time so much, and, you know, and coming over and everything that you're doing in the industry and for your people and with Rivers in Recovery and just all of it, man. And I think time is our most valuable asset, and I don't take that lightly. So thanks for giving me 45 minutes and telling me your story and being willing to, even though we had never met. You know, I appreciate you doing that for us. And certainly to our listeners, there was a lot of deep conversation there, but there was actually some solid takeaways in there that you can take and implement. You know, regardless of the size of your business, the mistake you can make is not implementing some of this cultural stuff soon enough.
Right.
You got to do it quicker, because it's already a pain in the ass to try and find employees and good employees. And if you're pumping money into them and trying to educate them and make them better, you can't forget, like, they can't just be about, are they selling enough for you? You got to care about these people. It's got to be more than the money. Reputation over revenue. Would you agree?
Love it. Yes, absolutely.
Well, thanks, man. We appreciate having you on.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate you.
Keep going kicking ass, man. I'm excited. Now you got a legacy, bro.
Let's go.
Now you got a legacy. We're connected for life now. You know that, right?
Yes.
Impact investment.
Listeners, man, I hope you got some good takeaways like I did. I literally took notes on here and then emailed them to myself, so I made sure that I actually took action on it. But we appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for listening. We're live at RoofCon 2021, our first time here at RoofCon. We've had some amazing guests. It's been really great. I'm excited. I know that Jeff's excited about this. Paul, it's great having you on. I see my man Aaron right now walking by. But, man, listen, keep leaving those reviews. Those reviews are what fuels our soul. Like, that's the stuff that lets us know that the impact, the content that we're bringing to you is on point. And also our guests, whenever you make these review posts about our guests, we love being able to take those and share it with them as well. I'm sure we'll get some on Paul. So until next time, gentlemen, we'll see you. Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe, and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put. So keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts.
You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review. And be honest and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you.